Accession number 30260, Reel 12.
Consequently, I finished up not even having a discharge form properly. But I must give this, the Australians always in the end, somehow I would get what I was entitled to. For example, when I asked for the gold card, what is a medical card that you get everything free. Again, when I went to the Department of Veterans Affairs, they said, well, we can't find a file on you. And I said, well, just send it up. And I waited 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden, the gold card appeared by mail. You get your gold card, that's fine. The same thing is, they have a scheme in DVA, War Service Home, that you can get a loan on building a house, what I did, on something like 3% interest for 40 years. Very, very good. When I went in, they said, yeah, well, got no file on you, nothing on it. And a week later, got it, you have been accepted for War Service Home and that. But when I went and saw those people again, they said, we don't know. We just got the confirmation to say that you've got it. And that's it.
As I've spoken to you, it must be a particularly bizarre situation to be in, because you know that someone knows, and they know that you know something. Obviously, something's happening by the sound of things behind the lines. When you were experiencing this scenario where you had been told that you were up for liquidation, literally, presumably that sort of really tested all of the things that you had sort of tried to instill in yourself, this sort of controlling of fear, everything that you had picked up
went
through
to
your
pieces.
Experience.
Went completely to pieces. And I think the main reason for that is because I couldn't put a reason to it. I think you can face fear, you can face anything, even if you know you have very little chance of coming back, if you know what you're doing. But if you work in the pitch darkness, and you know not why you're doing it or what the reason is, I think that is the worst scenario that you can come across. And all my defenses, my personal defenses and things that I build up from long experience, because even experience, like, you can't tell your wife. And what I could tell my wife, she doesn't believe it. I really honestly believe that half the things that I've told you, I've never even told my wife, because if I would tell, she doesn't want to listen to it. She says it's just too silly. My son, that you sort of, I've only got one son, very good person. I mean, he's got a very good job. It's, you know, he doesn't believe a word. He says, oh, forget about it there. It's just too stupid. But I found a way to overcome that by just shutting up and not saying anything. And it worked.
Well, someone knows, because you were in the paper on one of the front pages, I think, saying...
Yes.
Ernie Banks was in Z-Force, yeah. Literally.
Oh, that's a big thing there, I can show you. But, you know...
Well, that's all the medals and you know, the
certificates. Maybe this is a reason why
phony.
I put it out. You know, it's not trying to be proud or so, but, you know, to convince myself it did happen. But the point is that what devastated me most was that, and... I realize now that it's a very, very materialistic world as far as Secret Service go. And they're only working for their country and what they have to do. The type of people that are in it would certainly not be my friends, if I'm honest about it. They might be clever, they might be shrewd, but they certainly lack some kind of kindness and morality. And I feel that that type of person just never cares two bits about another individual.
Was there ever a time that you could really enjoy what you were doing?
No. Never have I did anything that I enjoyed doing. The only thing I enjoyed doing is when I got my 2 weeks leave or 3 weeks. And then, again, you were all the time thinking back what I could do, what I do, do that.
Well, you were mentioning to me, too, that you were trying to sort of work out a way of getting out of it. Was there ever a thought, I'm just going to go underground and hide out for the rest of the...
Don't worry, I thought of that many, many times. How could I get out of it? Could I... The closest I got, I thought, what about if I say that I got muscular trouble because you got to do something that the doctor can't find out. And they were so thoroughly prepared for that. They knew these tricks that I could soon see there was no hope. The only chance I thought I had, but I never had the opportunity, was if I could get to South Africa. Because in South Africa there was an active group working, picking Allied troops to Germany and go for the Germans. And I thought if I could ever get, I heard that from Dutch sailors that were there, that deserted in many in South Africa and they were never found. Now there was an organization in South Africa. As you know, the South Africans, well, a lot of us, they're very pro-German, that worked to get Dutch officials, Dutch military men, to get them up, and then somehow they were able to get them to Germany. How they did that. And I thought if I ever could get to South Africa, I wouldn't mind doing that. I wouldn't mind spending the rest of my life in a concentration camp or something.
Well, I mean, we have that sort of classic example where, you know, people shot themselves in the foot in the First World War and in tight spots like Stalingrad in the second. Did you ever think of, if I, you know, on the last day of my trip, I'd break my hand or something? I don't know.
I've thought of it, but there was a kind of a stubbornness in me that I wasn't going to do that. I think that on the whole, you want to remember, we were in a different period. In the 40s, we were very obedient people and follow rules. In a way, I was a bit of a coward too, to shoot myself or that I would just wouldn't do. I was too scared for that. You know, I would say, well, I'd rather carry on, hoping that soon they might get rid of me or do something. You know, many times I was very disobedient or spoke to senior officers, and I thought, no, they might put me in jail here or say you can't do, but they never did. You know, so I was always hoping for it, but nothing, I really never did anything about it.
On those weeks off that you would have on leave, what happened? I mean, I hear stories of people literally sort of hitting the bottle, going to the pub, whatever it might have been. Did you ever find yourself in that scenario?
Well,
not COVID.
Lonely. Very, very lonely. Trying to go to dance halls, picking up girls. And if I did, enjoyable time with the girl, that was great, I would do. And I would like to meet her again, and I meet them so until the time comes that I would have a sort of a girlfriend for 10 days and so. I enjoyed their company. And, you know, enjoyed, they enjoyed, because I had plenty of money. There's one thing you're not sure of that game, is you had money so you could pay taxes, you could go to nice cafes, nice meals. They enjoyed that, I enjoyed that. And that was a sort of the thing I did most. Another funny thing is that being brought up fairly conservatively, I sort of never did sort of expanded too much to these girls. I was always the perfect gentleman. And I think there were the two things, my upbringing and my immaturity in that sort of thing. I was, you know, I was thinking of, to put it straight out, for a long time, could I go and give her a kiss? You know, I was very, very immature in that sort of way and rather conservative.
Well, you're an old boy, basically, a young man. And
yeah.
We hear these stories of, you know, the boys being expected to go and fight a war, be a Secret Service, killer Kempe Tai, whatever it might be, and yet they haven't even experienced life.
No. And that was very much so. I was always a big fella, and, you know, look at a big fella and all that. But behind all that, I was terribly immature. But one thing I forgot, I must tell you, is it does get to you, this business. After the war was over, we'd often go dancing in the head here, the embassy, a big dance hall where there's dancing. But you was not allowed to bring in alcohol. How many times I went to the extreme to bring in a bottle of alcohol that I didn't even want to drink, really. Just dear, I did it in the war and I can do it now, you know. I remember once climbing up and going through a window quite high up to miss the step to get in, and the Mer said, my wife, where have you been? Oh, try to get a bottle of wine, and I didn't even drink it. But you know, it's this stupidity, immaturity, you know, things like that. That was a thing that I got afterwards. Same thing happened when I was in college. We had to do 1 year training college for teaching. It was university and then 1 year to do practical teaching. And at the end of the year, we had a camp at Rockingham. And that was sort of a farewell camp and a bit of it. And there was no alcohol allowed. Well, I was able to somehow got into the a 5 gallon beer, and I got that in, and we sat there till 3 o'clock drinking this beer. You know, stupid things like that. Very immature in a way.
Kids still do it now. It's not that unexpected for a young bloke to do that sort of thing. Yeah. But presumably a young bloke such as yourself coming back from a war which had been so unreal, how did you cope? You mentioned that you had help with your, you know, extreme love for your wife. That's
remarkable help and cope. But I coped because I felt one thing you do learn is self-discipline. Because if you didn't have the self-discipline, you would never have survived. And that self-discipline kept me going. I mean, to give you an example, one of the lecturers was an ex, I think he said he was a major, and he walked in pompously one day, and he said, you better do what I say here now, because I'm a major. So I'm sitting there with a big grin on my face, you know. I thought, what a pompous little bloke he is, you see. And he came up, he said, what are you grinning and laughing for? Were you in the forces? I said, yes. Were you a major? I said, no. I said, well, what were you? I said, it's not your bloody business what you are. And I said, do me a favor. Take your face away from me. I said, or else I'll smack it in your fist right in your mouth. I'll report you. I said, do what you like. You see, that was a reaction that I shouldn't have had. I should have taken that, but I didn't. But not often. Mm. Normally I was, you know, would walk away from things like that.
And people say that those people that couldn't leave it behind didn't get very far.
No. I had enough problems internally with me to worry about things like that. You know, the greatest thing that will always be with me is the fact that nobody believes me and nobody knows anyhow. And when it comes to forces, you know, they all say, oh, I was in the battalion and we did this and that. Well, I can't say that because I was always on my own, or with two people I've never seen again. And it does leave you, that is the difficulty, very, very lonely.
Mm. Well, you were mentioning to me earlier on that situation before, and just about every single ex-serviceman I've met and interviewed, they all talk about this camaraderie, the thing they got out of it, this sort of brotherhood, this friends in arms, all of that sort of...
And I haven't got that. because I've never had the commandment. That's when little things, a smile from a person, and I always remember. I remember once in a commander of the O-21, had a big red beard, a chap called, still know his name, Van Doom. He smiled at me, invited me to his little cabin that he had, because the commander got his own little cabin in the sub, and offered me a cup of coffee. I thought he was God. I was so taken that somebody took that trouble. And he asked me, he said, "Oh, how do you do this work? Do you find it difficult?" And the first person that ever asked me, "How do I feel?" And I've never forgotten him. Well, he went to Dundee and became commanding officer of the big Dutch camp in Dundee, submarine camp. And I lost contact, of course. But that's the only man I can remember. But you know, I can still see his face, and I can still remember that type of thing. Kindness was so rare.
And what do you think your job achieved?
In the long run, nothing. Nothing at all. Things worked out completely different in life. And I think it's all started with a way of trying to find out if there was going to be an invasion in Australia. And they didn't know how to do it. They had heard about all these commandos and fifth columns, how the Germans did it. But again, I had no idea the difficulty that came across in Southeast Asia. That was all right in England, where you all were Germanic people. And even if you get into enemy country, you had the Germans, they're all white, they all look the same. So things there was quite a different proposition altogether from when you go to Southeast Asia. Longer communication. Natives that hated you, where the occupied countries were all pro-allies and trying to help you, a lot of them anyhow. So the situation was completely different. So they were trying to do things what they had learned and from the Germans and so on in Europe, and trying to bring that in to Southeast Asia. And in many ways it came back that it was the individual that went, that had to find his way around. Was completely different. How successful we were? Well, in a small way we were successful. But in the long run it was the mighty Americans with their aircraft carriers and the huge troop movement that won the war. We were just nothing.
But people talk about that, and it's particularly towards the end of the war, and you're mentioning this period where the Americans are sort of taken everything up, and they were doing this cartwheeling up the islands and all the rest. MacArthur, what was the impression that people had of MacArthur? You mentioned Blamey at one point.
MacArthur was, in our impression, he was a god. He had the power, the will, and I would say that he was a quick learner. He learned very fast what the best way was of doing things. But on the other hand, he was ruthless too. But he knew a job had to be done. This is where we're doing it. And he succeeded because he had the new numbers, the troops, the weaponry, the equipment to do it. And he shrugged away the Brits, the Australians, the Dutch, as they were losers. That's just my opinion.